The second reading for today is from John 15. I've said these things to you so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. I do not call you servants any longer, because the servant does not know what the master is doing. But I have called you friends. I want to thank whoever put the platform up here. Last time I spoke from this pulpit, I couldn't see my notes because I was so close. I think it even could be a little higher, though. Oh, John did it. Oh.
We'll put a handle under there.
Yeah.
Oh, I was born short and I keep shrinking, but anyhow, that's another story. I begin this morning with two poets. First from William Blake. To see a world in a grain of sand and a heaven in a wildflower. And then from Goethe. So waiting, I have won from you the end, God's presence in each element. I was baptized by immersion when I was 6 years old. I remember the day well. My mother had bought me a new pair of jeans and a white shirt to be baptized in. When I emerged from the water and went to change in a room at the back of the church, my shirt, my underwear, and all of me from the waist down were a lovely shade of Levi Strauss blue. You could say that that made me a dyed-in-the-wool, or perhaps a dyed-in-the-denim Christian. For since that day, I have lived saturated in this phenomenon called Christianity, literally baptized in it. If I'd been born Jewish or Buddhist or Islamic, that would have probably been my story. I'm Christian because that is my narrative. My journey is and has been a Christian one. The journey has taken me through 3 degree programs in higher education, 2 vocations, and across the east, west, and south, north geographical extremes of this country. I visited the various theological movements of the last 20 centuries and found inspiration and hope there, as well as aversion and disdain. I found refuge and nurture in the gentle pietism of evangelical Christianity, and I have been the stranger left standing at the door of its exclusivity and fear-mongering. I have found an intellectual home in liberal Christianity and been repulsed at times by its cultural elitism. I've played the roles of defender of the faith and of challenger of the faithful. I've tilted at my own share of windmills. I have pontificated with more answers than questions. Ask my children. And I end up with more questions than answers. So, this is the view from here. Sort of my credo in a nutshell for this particular time and place in my story. I believe that the Christian story is all about incarnation, a term that means embodiment, enfleshment. The Gospel of John has the Word coming and literally tenting among us, setting up tent and traveling along with us. The story is about the movement from a monarchical and hierarchical and patriarchal God out there somewhere, separate from creation, to the embodiment of the divine in all that is. The Jesus story is a snapshot of that reality meant to dethrone the out there God and lure us into opening our lives to the Word made flesh among us. I believe that the Christian story begs for us to follow the implications of that snapshot. And the Word becomes enfleshed and dwells in all of existence and all being. Several years ago, well, this is what you get for jumping outside your notes. The Heart of Christianity by, yes, thank you, by Borg, wrote a book, The Heart of Christianity. And it's a good book, but it's a book, and it's a lot to be said. And I want today to say what I believe the heart of Christianity to be. I believe that the heart of Christianity resides in discovering and expressing this divine embodiment, this enfleshment, in two venues of spiritual practice. The first of those practices is the experience and appreciation of beauty. It's said that beauty is in the eye of the beholder. We could say beauty is in the eye, the ear, or the touch of the beholder. And that's true. Our differing cultures determine in large manner what we perceive as beautiful. But the experience of beauty itself is universal. Since the beginnings of human history, we humans have sat in awe of the beauty of creation. Poets and composers have sung its praise. Artists have sought to capture its essence. Why is that? Is there some evolutionary necessity for experiencing or expressing beauty? Or is it that the aesthetic, the beautiful, is a window into the divine reality of all of life? Theologian Sally McPhig says that God is not present to us in just one place, Jesus of Nazareth, but in and through all bodies, the bodies of the sun and moon, the trees and rivers, animals and people. She goes on to say that if we were to experience the divine as embodied, we might begin to see the marvels at our feet and at our fingertips, the intricate splendor of an alpine forget-me-not or a child's hand. We might begin to realize the extraordinariness of the ordinary. We would see creation as bodies alive with the breath of God. I believe that we experience the divine presence in the beauty of starlit night, the misty morning fog of pristine lake, the touch of light rain on hand and cheek, the power and splash of leaping waterfall, the feel of moist earth in gardener's hand, the gentle caress of human touch. I believe that we experience the divine presence in the creative doings of the artists who surround us, the musicians, the painters and carvers, the fabric artists, the poets and storytellers, and in our own artistic cravings and activities. The divine dances about us in sunsets and mountain vistas, in birdsong and floral fragrance, in vocals of soprano, alto, tenor, and bass. Though I sometimes wonder about the bass, but just kidding. In Litteza organ prelude, in carved Santas and walking sticks, in patchworks of vibrant fabric and weavings of interlaced threads, in images of crayon, of pencil and paint, and in poem and story. Creation is alive with the breath of the divine. In the last moments of Jesus' life, John has him gathered with his disciples and saying, "You are not my servants, you are my friends." Herein is the second practice I believe to be at the heart of Christianity: to engage life in ever-broadening circles of friendship. In the 12th century, Aelred of Rivaux, a Scottish Cistercian monk, asserted that God is friendship. And in a text called Spiritual Friendship, he declared that the greatest expression of the divine was to be seen in the expression of human friendship. Friendship based on a mutuality by which each one shares, each respects the other, each listens, each gives, and each receives. A friend, he says, is a guardian of the divine presence. Last week, some of us gathered down in Bradford Hall to talk about the year to come and what our hopes and expectations for that year might be and to fill out the calendar, etc. And as an exercise, what we call icebreakers, we went around the table and each was to give our name and then say something about why we were at this church, why we came to this church, and why we stayed at this church. And without exception, we went around the table and said it was because of friendship. Right? What? I heard another answer. Friendship, yeah. Of the friends that we make and the friends that support and love us and care for us and the act of friendship ourselves in that circle that is this church. The choir on several occasions has sung a song called Namaste, and its words seem appropriate for our conversation. Namaste, namaste. The divine in me blesses and honors the divine in you. The beauty of God stands before me, expressing uniquely as you. A Jewish theologian and philosopher, Martin Buber, one of my favorite sources of thought, captured the essence of this in his work, Ich und Du, which is translated into English as I and Thou, and perhaps you're familiar with that work. A more accurate translation would be, I and you, my family, my dear friend. Buber said that we can relate to life in two ways. We can relate to life as I and it out there, or we can relate to life as I and thou, thou meaning my dear friend, my family. In the former, we relate to other bodies as objects outside of ourselves, as competing beings or things to be used. When we relate to others as I, thou, there exists a mutual relationship of caring and intimacy and respect. We experience the beauty in the other, whether the other is a tree, an animal, another human, or for that matter, any part of creation. In that I-thou relationship with the other, we experience the presence of the divine. We know God. To practice friendship as mutual sharing, respect, listening, giving, and receiving is to be guardians of the divine presence in our midst, both for the sake of others and for the sake of ourselves. I believe that the heart of Christianity lies in opening our lives to the divine experience of beauty and friendship. Out of these two practices, the perception and experience of beauty and the engagement in ever-expanding circles of friendship, one can extrapolate all of the faithful acts of Christian discipleship. Love and awe and wonder, gratitude, devotion, service to others, care for the earth, action for justice, and the quest for peace.